Members, I will call this meeting of the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. First on the agenda is the roll call. Mr. Dodgery, please take the roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg?
Present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr?
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi?
Present.
Bernardi, present. Representative Elkins?
Elkins, present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick? Representative Frederick? Representative Hausman?
Present.
Hausman, present. Representative Heinrich?
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, present.
Kosnick, present. Representative Mason?
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson?
Present.
Olson, present. Representative Richardson?
Present.
Richardson, present. Representative Torkelson? Representative Torkelson? Representative West?
West, present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you. And then with that, I will move to the approval of the minutes for Thursday, March 18th. Representative Petersburg, would you like to make that motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move that motion to approve minutes of the last meeting.
Thank you. So we'll take this. This will be a voice vote. So if you could please unmute yourself. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? All those opposed, please say no. Motion prevails. Members, today we have six bills on the calendar for informational basis only. There's also amendments that have been offered by the bill authors and other members. We will not formally act on these proposals, any of which may be considered for inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Bill. The goal for today is for members to learn about the proposals and have the discussions. Each bill author has an allotted time for their bill presentation, and we'd like to get through all six bills by 2:45 is our stop time. We do not have extra time to come back this evening, so if we do not finish, we may continue the discussion on these proposals during Thursday or the Friday meetings this week. Again, we won't be moving these bills today or taking votes on the proposal on proposed amendments. If the provisions discussed this week are included in a transportation omnibus bill, there will be another opportunity for discussion, testimony, amendments prior to markup and final passage of that bill. So first on the agenda today is House File 1637, Representative Hausman. Welcome to the committee. Please tell us about your bill and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, do I still move it to be held laid over?
Mr. Howe?
No, we're just hearing for informational purposes today.
Okay. Thank you. House File 1637 requests $10 million for a second train to Chicago, and this is for the purpose of matching federal dollars, $32 million in federal dollars. We lose that if we don't match it this year. Our other partners, the federal government, Amtrak, and Wisconsin, all have their money on the table. Wisconsin used to be the barrier, now they are ahead of us. There's some urgency to this. There's strong support along the corridor, specifically Red Wing and Winona. We hear from them a good bit. All across the Midwest, states are moving aggressively. States like Kansas and Texas, they all know that passing passenger rail is part of a healthy and competitive regional economy. There's growing interest in the legislature, too. Todd Lippert has a bill asking for $500,000 to study the corridor going south When All Aboard did their study, they determined that that corridor going south is actually potentially the highest ridership. I have one bill that funds the entire Minnesota Rail Plan, and interestingly, that's the one that Senator Jeremy Miller, who represents the corridor, has introduced in the Senate. He introduced the entire rail package. We have some testifiers. I'll keep my remarks brief and save time for them.
Thank you. First up for testimony is Commissioner Trista Mastacastillo. Sorry if I butchered your name. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Commissioner Trista Mastacastillo. I'm a Ramsey County Commissioner, and today I'm here representing the entire Great Rail Commission, local and mostly from St. Paul. Most rural governments have reported this second change. Do you hear me?
It's kind of breaking up. I was wondering if it was just my internet.
I don't know if it's on my end or maybe someone else.
Okay, now I'm completely frozen.
Are you able to hear me now?
If you could try turning off your video, that might help.
I can hear you. Okay.
Okay. Yep, I can hear you better now.
Maybe you can hear me now.
I think it's better.
Okay,
yep.
Kids at home using the bathroom. Anyway, so I am here representing the Great River Rail Commission. As I said, it's of 18 local regional governments from St. Paul to La Crosse supporting the second train. It's really important to know what the second train is not, and it is not light rail transit or commuter rail. It's instead an intercity passenger rail using existing track owned by Canadian Pacific Railway. This adds a second train. It really for us is about transit equity. We know that people who want to have options for both leisure and for work to be able to use the train, and the train is accessible and affordable. It's something that's really important to us. Additionally, the train has a great return on investment. As Representative Hausman mentioned, there is already federal money on the table. Wisconsin has their match on the table, as does Amtrak. And so we are seeking the $10 million match, the final dollar match from Minnesota. And it will bring in an additional $4 million a year in tourism dollars. It's also expected to save money for our freight shippers of $34 million in operating and inventory costs. Currently, the train that both passenger and freight share the same track, and this funds improvements to that so that they don't have to share the same, and that we can speed up both transit for passengers as well as freight. It will additionally save on environmental costs long term. We value this at about $6.75 million over 34 years. That would be saved in environmental costs as well as business travelers gaining more than $64 million in productive time over 30 years because you're able to continue working while you're on the train. The other thing about the train for us, it is, as I mentioned, about transit equity, which really is about who uses the train, how it's being used, transportation from the Twin Cities down to Red Wing and La Crescent, through La Crescent and Winona, college students able to use the train to get back and forth. Oftentimes, you know, college to school, they don't always have a car, but they want to be able to get to the Twin Cities or get home and connect from there. And so this would improve that as well with a train going every day. And so we're really excited. It's something that's really important to our economy in Minnesota as we're thinking about rebuilding and building back better and investing in jobs. And we have a broad range of support, a bipartisan support, as Representative Hausman mentioned, of business as well as local government and industry to really improve track, improve transit, and build out the system moving forward. With that, Madam Chair, I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Torkelson, is this to the testifier?
Yes, Madam Chair, I believe it is. I was
Representative Torkelson?
Not on the beginning of her testimony, Madam so maybe Chair, she talked about this and I missed it. Are you able to hear me because you are frozen? Yes.
Can we have Representative Nelson, can you take over chairing
and I will manage to fix my internet issues? Sure what's going on.
I guess I can. Representative Torkelson, you said your question was for the
folks. I'm going to testify. Is your cable connected?
My internet's unstable, also.
I do have a question for the testifier. I'll just put it out there and see what happens. So, this is the second train to Chicago. We know that the existing train to Chicago does have scheduling issues on occasion.
You're muted in that getting Representative Torkelson. You're breaking up also, Commissioner. Representative Torkelson, if we can see if we can go to our testifier. I don't have the list in front of me, but Representative Hausman, who's your second testifier?
From All Board Minnesota, Brian Nelson. And I can speak to the Torkelson question about the scheduling. Right now, the train that we have leaves the West Coast, runs into weather problems in the Idaho-Montana area, then it runs into freight problems. Pardon me? And then it runs into freight problems in the Dakotas, and time arrives here, it is sometimes very late. If we had a second train, it would leave the same time every day. And that's all the difference in the world to the traveling public. And so our testifier comes from All Aboard Minnesota, Brian Nelson.
Thank you, Hausman. Mr. Nelson, Brian Nelson, if you want to give testimony. Brian Nelson, if you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and the committee. Can everybody hear me okay? Hi, this is Brian Nelson from All Aboard Minnesota. Can everybody hear me okay?
You're breaking. You're in and out, and you're really fuzzy.
Yeah.
I can hear you now.
Hi, this is Brian Nelson from All Aboard Minnesota.
I see you don't have your screen. It helps to shut them off. We're having trouble. That's better.
No, I turned my camera off for better connectivity. Okay, can everybody hear me now?
Yep. Proceed with your testimony,
sir. Can people hear me now?
So far we can, so proceed with your testimony.
Okay, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, I can hear you just fine. Thank you. All Aboard Minnesota is a nonprofit citizen group advocating and educating for more rail passenger service in the state of Minnesota and connecting us to the upper Midwest. We've been talking about the second train frequency between the Twin Cities and Chicago for a while now, but I'm very pleased to report to the committee that in 2021, there is deep and broad support, not only along this corridor, but in outstate Minnesota. One of our members just recently met with the mayors and city administrators in La Crescent and Winona and asked them to pass resolutions in support of the second train from these cities. La Crescent has already passed this month, and we're working with Winona to pass an updated resolution to their 2020 version. The city of St. Paul passed a resolution in support of the second train in January, and Red Wing passed one in February, which means that all four cities along the route where the second train will stop have now endorsed the service and are urging the legislature to appropriate the $10 million to make this service a reality, as Representative Houseman outlined, in order to get the federal match. There's deep and broad support, and more cities from St. Paul to Fargo are extending their support for resolutions for more rail passenger service to their cities. All of these resolutions talk about the benefits that Commissioner Trista outlined in terms of economic benefits, the needed mobility option for their residents, the benefits of the infrastructure spending that will improve freight train operations and improve grade crossing safety for auto and truck traffic. So they're all in line talking about these needed benefits for their cities. And as Representative Houseman also mentioned, states like Texas and Kansas are investing in more rail service. And there are a lot of other states, such as Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio, that are investing in more passenger rail service as they are realizing already the economic and mobility benefits for their citizens. We hope that the state of Minnesota will join them. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. We also have Dan Crome available for questions. Representative Kosnick, is this question to the testifier? Representative Kosnick?
I can wait until after the testimony.
I think this is the last testifier.
I can wait until after the testimony, Madam Chair.
Representative Hausman, this was the last testifier, correct?
Could somebody then tell me what the state operating?
Mr. Crome?
Madam Chair, just for the committee's reference, it appears that Zoom is having system-wide server issues, as if you can't tell. So it's not particularly any one person's video here. But my question, Madam Chair, to either the author or one of the testifiers was, what is the state's operating annual obligation on the second line here? What would it cost the state per year?
Representative Paulson, would you like to take that, or would you like to defer to Mr. Crom?
I think Mr. Crom, please. Minda.
Mr. Crom?
Madam Chair, I'm Dan Crom with MnDOT's Passenger Rail Program, and the annual operating subsidy for this is estimated between 7.6 and 7.8 million divided amongst the three states. On how that's divided is yet to be determined. That's one of several agreements we're going to have in place. Do we do it on boardings? Do we do it on train miles? But that's the amount of the estimated state operating subsidy. I will state, too, that we did receive $31.8 million in federal funds for the capital investments, but we also received with Wisconsin 12.8 $6 million in operating support for the first 3 years of operation, reducing that $7.6 million to $78.8 million down substantially. So there's over $50 million in federal funds that are on the table right now.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for the answer. So after 3 years, roughly $2.5 million, Mr. Crome, if they divided the operating cost by the three states evenly, and I don't know if that's feasible or not. I don't think it, can you give us a better example after 3 years, what we might expect the state to cut to have to cough up to operate the second line? That's really what I'm trying to understand. What do you think, Mr. Crome, will be the cost to the state?
Madam Chair, Representative, in our application for the operating support, we estimate the fourth year that the operating cost will be 100% on the part of the states and the operating or the fare box revenue. We're estimating $7.4 million the last year, and half of that, if we split it evenly between Minnesota and Wisconsin, would be 3.7. What we're doing is extending one of the current trains that Illinois and Wisconsin are supporting between Chicago and Milwaukee. So we're really looking at the cost of operating it from Milwaukee to St. Paul. That's why Illinois already has an investment in this corridor.
Representative Kosnick?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the answer. So it sounds like a couple million bucks every year. So that's kind of what I wanted to get at. It doesn't sound like we know for sure yet, which might be helpful, but thanks for the information.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try again. My question has to do with scheduling. I do understand that the current train has scheduling issues because of interruptions in service elsewhere in the country. Once this second line is in place, will both trains run on a predictable, steady schedule, or will we still have one train that operates on a non-dependable schedule?
Mr. Crome?
Madam Chair, Representative, it is hoped that they would both operate on schedule. We have a lot of confidence in the second train because it's originating in St. Paul's. Eastbound will be on schedule the vast majority of the time. Westbound is never an issue with either train because they originate in Chicago. It's just a matter of what level of construction is going on west of the Twin Cities all the way to Seattle, what level of congestion is out there, what level of impact of weather at the time, but has really made it unpredictable eastbound. That's why we know that we have strong support for a second reliable train eastbound. And the schedule that we're looking at is staggered 3 hours off of the current Empire Builder service. So theoretically, people along that corridor for those regional trips could take the train and return in one day without an overnight.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I still don't understand. Will the original eastbound train still be subject to the same sorts of disruptions that it's subject to today?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Crome?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, it will.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. So we're really not gaining any better dependability on that existing run. I understand the second run will be more dependable because it's restricted to this region, but we still have the issue with the original eastbound train often disrupted on the schedule. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kosnick, would you like to present your amendment?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair. I'm not sure what the procedure is since we're just kind of late and over, but I guess for formalities purposes, I would move the H1637A1 amendment. And members, Madam Chair, what the amendment does is it deals with the light rail transit funding. It does provide the $10 million out of the general fund for this bill. But what it does is gets the state out of the operating cost and subsidies for the light rail transit system. Looking at this, I fully recognize this is not light rail that we're talking about with Representative Hausman's bill. This is passenger rail, but tried to kind of determine it. Sounds like there's going to be about $2 to $2.5 million additional operating costs to the state on this. And by eliminating the light rail transit subsidies from the state and having our local partners that planned and asked for those lines in Hennepin and Ramsey County and a little bit in Anoka, push those operating costs to be self-sufficient among our local partners. And that would save Metro Transit about $33 million a year. And this is important as we're trying to look at the overall transit and transportation system. Pretty much have bipartisan agreement that we have a $600 million in growing deficit in trying to figure out how to maintain our transit systems, our roads, our bridges, and how are we going to actually keep up with maintaining our transportation system. So this is one way to have our local partners on our light rail system operate their light rail systems on their own. Representative Hausman, this bill does take advantage, and I recognize taking advantage of some federal funds and matching funds to a quite nice return for the $10 million. But what we're doing it here, instead of trying to figure out how to fill in that $600 million gap for our transportation system, it looks like we're adding to the scope of what we do without plugging in and meeting our current obligations. So the amendment would provide an opportunity to narrow our scope a little bit. And it should also be noted, we have a big transportation issue right in front of us that we need to address. And that is, Metro Transit in 24 and 25 is going to be facing a $250 million funding deficit. And so I'm not sure how this bill, by adding more operating subsidies to the state, helps that at all. But that's what our committee should be focused on, is how do we meet our current obligations and bridge that maintenance shortfall of $600 million a year, and then also address that fiscal cliff that Metro Transit is approaching of $250 million a year. So this is amendment. Is offered for discussion and would help alleviate some of that to $33 million a year less of a state obligation. And the counties, the local partners, have a reserve through their transportation sales tax that actually should be able to cover this quite easily. So that is the amendment, members, and I appreciate, we're not going to be voting on it, but I appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kuznick. Representative Hausman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As written, the result of the amendment, though, it has several metro counties being responsible for the funding of what is a regional system. All of our testimony has shown that this intercity passenger rail really has regional and statewide significance, The point of the amendment says several metro counties are going to be responsible for the funding because we're just switching on some funding. So and I think mixing messages too. I would argue, by the way, that even light rail has regional significance. None of this works unless all of those pieces come together, all of the various public transit pieces come together.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. Is there any further discussion to the amendment? I don't see anybody on the list. So any further discussion to the bill? I don't see anybody raising their hand. So Representative Hausman, would you like to finish up with any closing remarks?
I'll just thank you for the time. I know we took a little extra because of the technical problems, so I'll save it for the rest of the bills.
Thank you, Representative Hausman. So with that, we will move on to Representative Murphy, House File 1109. Welcome to the committee, Representative Murphy, and please tell us about your bill.
You're muted, Rep. Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The Northern Lights Express is not something new. Up to 1985, Duluth was connected to the Twin Cities and the East Coast and the West Coast through Amtrak with a passenger rail service. I grew up with the railroad, knowing what a railroad was, knowing that it just didn't carry freight all day long, but sometimes it brought relatives to visit. Sometimes it brought tourists from the cities or other parts of Minnesota to the Great Lake to see the foreign ships come through the aerial lift bridge with their bounty that they were bringing and taking from the Duluth Harbor, the most inland harbor of the world. We brought connections of all kinds with the railroad service. From 1861 to 1985, there was great growth and there are always options of the fixed railroad passenger services and freight services. And the two things go hand in hand. And just as Representative Hausman was talking about the federal government being our partners, the federal government would still be our partners if we had a train that connected Minnesotans together from Minneapolis north, from Chicago to St. Paul, from San Francisco, from Oregon to Duluth. The possibility exists and we should not turn our back on it. Ken Buehler is here. He is an expert and has been working tirelessly for years. And he will tell his story of the history and the need for this project. It's an option.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Mr. Buehler, can you please state your name for the record and continue with your and proceed with your testimony?
Madam Chair, I think we'll start with an audio check. Are we working?
Yeah. Looks like we're working through these issues, so.
All right. Madam Chair, thank you very much. Representative Murphy, thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ken Buehler. I live in Duluth, and I'm chair of the Technical Advisory Committee for the Northern Lights Express. Thank you all for this opportunity to present an update on a train that will change everything. Northern Lights Express will connect Duluth Superior to Minneapolis using the existing track and stopping in Hinckley, Cambridge, and Foley Junction. A top speed of 90 miles an hour makes this a 2-hour and 20-minute ride. That means the train is competitive with the automobile, but with the major advantage being those 2 hours can be productive time instead of wasted windshield time. Northern Lights Express is one of the only rail initiatives that is fully shovel ready. The project was completed all steps necessary to receive a federal finding of no significant impact. What this means is that NLX is now ready to access federal funds. On behalf of our Joint Powers Alliance, I want to thank Representative Murphy and the legislature for including $3 million in the October bonding bill for improvements to the Grassy Point drawbridge in Duluth. Not only is this bridge a critical freight rail link connecting the port of Duluth to the rest of the nation, it's also the future route of NLX. And the bridge is one of two choke points on the NLX route that, once repaired, will increase speed and decrease travel time. That $3 million from the state will be used to leverage $14.5 million from existing federal programs, such as Crissy, Build, and Infra, to finish the Grassy Point's $17 million investment. It's very important that the Minnesota Department of Transportation, which was granted these funds, immediately apply for the necessary federal dollars to get this work done. The time is now because the national focus will soon be on infrastructure. The Biden administration has said that a major transportation bill will be the next item on their agenda. The president earned his Amtrak Joe nickname by commuting daily between his home in Delaware to his various duties in Washington, D.C. by train. Amtrak will be our partner in operating NLX, as Representative Murphy mentioned. Last September, Amtrak released their plan for major expansion to their system. Growth will come between pair cities located less than 500 miles apart. Too long to drive, too short to fly. Mr. Howe, if you could please put up my map at this time. That takes a minute. There it is. Thank you, John. This is Amtrak's map showing their expansion plans in existing corridors and new ones like NLX. We are in this plan, and it includes major funding to build our part of the system. Amtrak is seeking $25 million over 5 years to accomplish this expansion. That light at the end of this long tunnel of work is finally our oncoming train. And it's a good thing. Good for jobs that will be created because of this new connectivity. Good for the economies of the cities along the corridor. All of northeastern Minnesota will share in the new jobs this project will create by allowing people to work where they live and travel as they want. Trains are good for the environment. Per passenger mile, trains have the lowest carbon footprint of any form of transportation except cruise ships. House File 1109 is important because it will leverage federal dollars at a time when there's renewed focus on infrastructure and the environment. Building the railroads changed America, and NLX is a train that will change everything. Thank you, Representative Murphy and Madam Chair, for this opportunity to speak. And if there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Buehler, for your testimony. Next, we'll have a brief discussion on the amendment. If someone wishes to present the A2 amendment for discussion, I believe Representative Kosnick, is that yours again?
That is my amendment, Madam Speaker. And sounds like you, Madam Chair, excuse me, promote you real quick. Get organized here. We had, I didn't hear in the testimony what who was paying the operating costs and how much the operating cost would be of this. Maybe the author or Mr. Buehler may enlighten the committee with how much the annual operating cost will be to the state of Minnesota for this train.
Representative Murphy or Mr. Buehler?
Mr. Buehler.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Murphy, Madam Chair, Representative. This program that Amtrak is proposing, this five-year, $25 billion build-out of these pair cities within existing and new corridors, has a provision in it where Amtrak will operate and cover the operating losses for the first 5 years before turning it over to the state on what's known as a Section 209, which is very similar to the support that you provide for other intercity trains, such as the Empire Builder or the TCMC, which is the second train to Milwaukee, Chicago. We estimate that fare box recovery on this project will be somewhere around 70 to 74%. So the operating deficit has yet to be fully determined, but it has a five-year window to build up ridership to make that operating support from the state of Minnesota as little as possible. And I do not have for you, sir, a handy figure, just that we expect about a 70 to 74% fare box recovery, which is far better than other, even other existing Amtrak routes around the country, much higher than the Empire Builder, for example.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate those that insight. So after 5 years, the operating cost, I think what I'm hearing is that the entire operating cost will rest with the state of Minnesota. According to my notes, the annual operating cost is estimated to be almost $19 million a year. And if you can get 70% fare box recovery, that would be amazing. I I think MnDOT estimates it to be about 63.5%, slightly lowered, but not too bad. But the 2010 State Rail Report estimated a fare box recovery of only about 21%. So I think there's certainly there's some fuzzy math going on here, and we haven't seen a fare box recovery above any of those numbers anytime recently. So I will introduce my amendment briefly so we can get on to the other bills. But in talking with these train lines, both the one that Representative Hausman had and this one for Representative Murphy, the train, casino train to Hinckley here, it's important to take a look at what we do know as a state, and that is one of the first non-light rail trains, the North Star train, has pretty much failed since its beginning. Ridership is down like 80%. The subsidy per passenger right now is about $400 one way. So somebody riding from Big Lake to Minneapolis and back is costing the state about $800 just in one day. And so what I would propose and what the amendment does is to mothball the North Star commuter rail. It would ask that it would be contingent on receiving federal approval to withdraw out of our operating agreement, and so that the state would not be on the hook for any contractual obligations to operate the line that currently is a barrier to basically we're tied to keeping that rail line going, and to back out would be maybe $85 million. So we'd have to enlist our federal congressional delegation to get a waiver of that, and then we could take that savings of operating, which is about $6 million per year, of the operating cost to Metro Transit that operates the North Star, and we could do much better things with those funds. And I would suggest in this amendment that what we could do is establish a redevelopment fund in the rioted areas of Lake Street, University Avenue, and in North Minneapolis on Broadway. And this would help to establish a fund to help those business areas that were severely affected with the civil unrest last summer. And part of the promise bill that was introduced last summer with Representative Neuer, and have the Met Council Transit Development Authority set up some matching grants to help these businesses in these corridors. And I think that would do a lot more for the economic development than what the North Star is currently doing, and do a lot more than what the current bill proposed train to Hinckley would do. So that is the amendment and an idea that I would appreciate the committee's consideration. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy, would you like to respond at all?
Madam Chair, Representative Kosnick, committee members. I certainly think this is far more than a train to Hinckley, and it's far more than a train to the northern train. Dwight Eisenhower is not going to rise again. He was the president that built or initiated the building of the national roads, the roads that we all drive our cars on, if we have a car. But lots more people don't have cars today than they had during Dwight Eisenhower's time. And the people of my age generally talk about passenger trains as something in the past. But they are not, as I said in my early words, trains connect the country. Trains, passenger trains, ride on freight rails across the nation. In Minnesota, we're not taking people from the Twin Cities to Hinckley for the casino. It is a stop along the way that they have the option to make. But trains today would be for businesses, the businesses that are already in place and the businesses that are going to come. We cannot stop thinking of the whole transportation world together, as Representative Kosnick is trying to do, to get out of fulfilling all of our needs, taking it from the transportation dollars to fix the riots of the summer. We have to do both, and we cannot allow the connecting with the nation to fix our roads and our bridges, as had already been mentioned. We have to do all of those things, and we have to do it thinking about the future rather than the past. And the people that testified in Duluth at the UMD hearing that your committee came up to listen to, you heard the people from Wisconsin and the people from northern Minnesota talk about the need for our freight lines across the nation and the state. And what's wrong with capturing those freight lines and use it in a few times a day for passenger service, for families to get around in, for holidaymakers, but for people that want to work in one place and live in another? It's up to you if we're going to just go in our silos. It's up to the committee to decide whether all options should be available or some should be cut totally from some people, but not all people, and let the rich people have the highways that Dwight Eisenhower envisioned. But those have to be replaced now too, just as fixed railroad lines have always been replaced for continued freight. So let's put the passenger train back on the freight lines.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Kosnick, thank you for bringing both this amendment and the other ones forward. It's always good to have additional ideas on the floor for us to discuss. It sounds like we aren't going to really participate one way or the other in regards to this these amendments, but at least they're out for discussion, and I appreciate you bringing them forward. Representative Murphy absolutely touched upon a point that I was going to bring up, and that is that whereas it's much easier for us to find the funds in order to develop and build a program, it is much more difficult to find funds ongoing to actually keep it, maintain it. Her reference to Dwight Eisenhower and the building of the interstate is absolutely right on. We were able to build it out, but we never provided for the ongoing maintenance and repair of it. And so now here we are 50 years later, and the road is starting to wear out, and we're looking at how we fund it with reducing funding mechanisms that are there. And rail is no different, and it's something that at least we should be cognizant of, that we have to figure out a way of how we're going to maintain it. Because right now, the railroad subsidy that goes for passenger rail, and it doesn't matter, you know, which side of the party lines you're on, right now that is all coming from transportation, Department of Transportation funding, which is primarily funded through those that are driving cars. It's through gasoline tax, car license fees, et cetera, et cetera. And as those reduce over the years, that funding stream is also going to dry up. And it seems like it's very difficult for us to consider sharing general fund dollars for transportation as well. So the dilemma comes, so it sounds like, well, $6 million this year, it sounds like no big deal. But in 5 years, it's probably going to be higher than that. Almost everything is. And one of the things that we need to remember is that current rail system is being upgraded and updated not by mostly federal funds or state funds, but it's by the profits and the ability of private business to rebuild them. So the question becomes, you know, where do we find those dollars? It has to be something that we considered into the future as well. And right now, I haven't heard really, you know, where we're going to get $6 million for this, the $2 or $3 or $4 million for the Amtrak. Pretty soon, we're looking at $10 million a year for subsidy of these two particular programs. And it could be more, it could be less, depending on ridership. But those are all unknowns. And if we don't at least have some discussion about what are we going to do into the future, we're kind of also setting ourselves up for failure, much like trying to fund the maintenance of our road infrastructure that we have today. And so I'm just cautioning us that these are important discussions to have. Whether or not we're going to come up with answers, I don't know. But I don't think we can just put our head in the sand and saying, well, we have the money to build it out. We won't care about the future. I think that's important for us to do. So thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate the discussion.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Koznick, you had another question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to wrap up the amendment, you know, I think the point is made and needs to be restated. We need to address our current transportation needs, and that includes, Representative Murphy, our roads and bridges, our bus system that we have, the light rail system, and that's the point that I'm trying to make. Before we expand to the casino, because that's where I think this is really driving this a little bit, to the casino in Hinckley, we need to have a plan to pay for what we currently have and to maintain that. That is our obligation first and foremost. Once we do all that, then I think it's appropriate to talk about additional scope of transit and transportation. But we are failing miserably on maintaining our roads and bridges and even our bus system. We don't have a mechanism to maintain the light rail trains once they wear out. We don't have that in place right now. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. And so the question was asked, what's wrong with this? What's wrong with it is 19 million reasons. $19 million a year to operate that's going to be taken out of other current necessary obligations and responsibilities that the state has. $250 million deficit for Metro Transit in 2024-25. That's coming up pretty quick. We need to address that. We talked about the second train. And so what the amendment does makes us take a look at maybe it's time to cut our losses with the North Star train and address our current needs. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Koznick. Is there any further discussion to the amendment or the bill? I don't see any other hands. Oh, Representative Torkelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question has to do with the use of the freight rail track. We've seen with the Bottineau light rail train what happens when you fail to negotiate with the Class 1 railroad early in the planning process. Can you tell, can the testifier or the author tell me about progress negotiating with the freight rail Class 1 railroads for the use of this line to Duluth?
Mr. Buehler?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, we've been in contact with BNSF all along. They are the track owner, Burlington Northern Santa Fe. This is a very sparsely used line, unlike the Bottineau line, which is pretty much encompasses all of the mainline double track coming into the cities from the western states for BNSF. This line has only about 12 trains a day. It's shared with the other Class 1 railroads, but the traffic on the freight side of this is sparse. So BNSF is seeing an opportunity here and has embraced working with us. Do we have a negotiation in place? No, we're not there yet. But as you know, Amtrak will take care of that. Amtrak has the right to occupy corridors at their desire and to negotiate with the carrier to get a fair rate for that use of that line. And so BNSF basically can't say no. And if I may add one other point, just to clarify the responsibilities for funding on an ongoing basis, keep in mind that about 18% of this line does go through Wisconsin. So Wisconsin will be sharing in some of that support as well. So it's not totally going to land on Minnesota's shoulders. And I think it will be very successful. Our early projections show a ridership of about 700,000 to 750,000 passengers a year after a five-year buildup. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Bueller. Representative Torkelson, we're running a little short on time for this bill. Do you have any follow-up?
I'll just remark, Madam Chair, that occupation is one thing. Running a timely high-speed schedule is another, and we'll leave it at that.
Thank you. And living right, I grew up right next to the Botnell, where the Botnell lines are, and actually live just a few blocks from the Foley or the line that we're talking about right now. So I can tell you that there's not that many trains that go run by my house. So Representative Murphy, do you have any closing comments?
No, I think I've said enough. And Mr. Bueller, thank you very much for being here and for your expertise.
Thank you for your kind words, Representative Murphy.
Thank you guys so much. So with that, we will move on to Representative Elkins, House File number 31. Welcome, Representative Elkins, and please tell us about your bill and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This bill would create an appropriation to the 494 Corridor Commission to support their traffic management organization activities, especially supporting telework with more and more workers in their service area along the 494 corridor. Moving to telework during the pandemic, their operations have really been strained to the max right now. So we have Melissa Madison, who's the director of 494 Commuter Services, here to testify for the bill.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Madison. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Melissa Madison, Executive Director of the 494 Corridor Commission and Commuter Services. We want to thank Representative Hornstein and Representative Elkins for assisting with this bill. And good afternoon, members of the committee. The I-494 Corridor Commission is comprised of elected officials and city administrators from Bloomington, Eden Prairie, Edina, Minnetonka, and Richfield, and partners with MnDOT, Metropolitan Council, and the private business community. The 494 Corridor Commission started commuter services in 2002 to build relationships with the business community to improve transportation options and support commuter alternatives as a solution to slow the growth of traffic congestion and improve mobility. Working through employers to reach employees with options for sustainable commuting is incredibly effective. Commuter Services works with over 1,000 employers and multi-tenant properties with a wealth of resources and services aimed at converting drive-alone commuters into a sustainable commute mode. Right now, we are more focused on telework than usual because of COVID-19. And each of our five member cities of the 494 Corridor Commission pays 50 cents per resident per year to the commission for this work. Our cities have stretched far and deep to pay for the wonderful services and results, and we receive a grant from CMAC funds, and we also need additional local match than what our cities are able to afford. The state has provided us with funding twice before, both under a Republican leadership and under Democrat leadership. We have been incredibly grateful for the state support as it has allowed us to keep commuter services program solvent. Commuter services works on the demand side of traffic congestion with efforts to reduce single occupant vehicle commuting. And commuter services has been working with employers since 2002 to offer robust resources and services to help employers establish and expand, as well as manage their commuter programs. And these include discounted transit pass programs, pre-tax, preferential parking for carpoolers and vanpoolers, bike racks, on-site commuter fares to help employees with sustainable commuting options on a one-on-one basis, and displays with transit route information, help finding a carpool partner, and guaranteed ride home. Prior to COVID-19, in a typical year, commuter services staff holds approximately 100 to 135 on-site commuter fares with employers and at multi-tenant office parks. If you could, please see the handout summarizing commuter services outreach and results, which is a snapshot of what we achieve on an annual basis in partnership with employers. A senior vice president of communications at Best Buy has said, commuter services helps us address a major employee concern, getting to work. It's like having an extra staff person dedicated to commuting issues, she said. Commuter services is a staff of 4 full-time employees, and in a typical year, over 5,500 drive-alone commuters switch to using a sustainable commute mode after receiving customized assistance from commuter services, resulting in an estimated 56 million vehicle miles avoided as a direct result of our outreach. Each vehicle mile reduced by commuter services outreach costs just 1 cent. And also of special note, it takes the equivalent of over 1 million mature trees to reduce the equivalent 23,000 metric tons of CO2 emissions. Telework has been a tool in our employer and commuter outreach toolkit since the 35W bridge fell many years ago. We have assisted many companies establish and also expand telework as a business strategy. We have hosted 2 telework summits for employers to learn how to implement telework as a business strategy. And since the COVID-19 pandemic, we have been surveying commuters every 3 months about their current commute mode and when they think their employer will call them back to the work site. Results from our commuter surveys have been resolute. When employees are called back to the work site, they plan to drive alone for safety reasons. We have all enjoyed a break from traffic congestion during COVID, but commuters tell us they will revert back to driving alone before long. We are able to assist employers with implementing long-term telework business strategies that hit the sweet spot of increasing employee productivity and morale while keeping employees engaged and meeting deadlines. We have also recently developed a Twin Cities telework website, a telework-specific newsletter, and a telework webinar series for both employers and teleworkers. The $300,000 we are requesting from the state will be used to deliver telework resources to more companies around the state and allow us to continue this work next year. Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, Representative Elkins, and members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to present a small summary of what we do, and thank you for taking time to consider our funding needs and to help continue this important work.
Thank you, Ms. Madison. Is there any member questions? I think the worker morale is a big issue when it comes to telework. I was able to talk to a friend this weekend, and she was just talking about how much more of a productive employee, but not only just more of a productive employee, a productive mother. And I just think that's super, that does help with morale for your workers. I know it's been really nice just being able to sit home at dinner while I'm, have the floor session in my ears or something like that. Just being able to see my kiddo at night is nice. Yeah. So I really appreciate that. Representative Elkins, I'm not seeing any questions. So if you would like to wrap up with any comments.
Real quick, I've been associated with the 494 Corridor Commission and Commuter Services for close to 20 years now. So I've served on the board and served as the chair. And the staff is just really dedicated to this work. They really believe in what they're doing, and they do a really effective job. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And I see Representative Chair Hornstein is back in the committee. So with that, I will hand the virtual gavel back to Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. I just got back, so maybe if you could just do the next bill, and then I'll get reoriented here.
Sounds good. So, Representative Elkins, you're up again, House File 272. And if you want to just
proceed with your testimony. Tell us about your bill, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This bill would allow the deputy registrars and DVS to establish a pilot program to under which the deputy registrars would be able to place kiosks in various convenient public places where people could renew their license tabs without having to go into the office or do it online. And we have two testifiers today on this one. We have Donnie Vossen, who is an actual deputy registrar, and followed by Frank Amoruso from the company that provides the kiosks. So, Mr. Vossen.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Vossen. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Donnie Vossen from the deputy registrar office in Brainerd. My wife and I run it. As far as the kiosks are concerned, the reason we're so interested in them is, you know, the obvious reasons, it's convenience for the taxpayer. This would offer 24/7 service to anybody who needs it, and the immediate satisfaction in some cases of relief for the user is very helpful. But the potential to add DNR registrations and hopefully the near future would also help, by the way. And considering the financial straits deputy offices are in and the workload that has been relegated to us, this will shorten the long lines both our offices and the public are currently dealing with. Joan Rivers once said that we're the only generation that can stand in front of a microwave and tell it to hurry up. Well, it's 2021, and taxpayers still perceive that government is cooking with a hot plate. And I'm just here to say kiosks just are an opportunity for Minnesota government to catch up to the technology that often passes us by. Thank you.
Mr. Voss, and that's actually, that was going to be one of my questions, is the DNR, is that something that, because I believe we get our boat registration at your deputy registrar's office. So with that, we'll move on to your second testifier, Mr. Amoruso.
Yeah, he's with the company that provides the kiosk, and he'll explain how they work.
Thank you. Mr. Amoruso, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, committee. I am Frank Amoruso. I'm the Chief Growth Officer of Intellectual Technologies, Inc., a.k.a. ITI. And we are the providers of self-service kiosks to motor vehicle agencies around North America. So we have a tremendous amount of experience. I should probably turn my camera on initially, and if it gets a little funky, I'll turn it back off. Essentially, with the kiosks, it's a program we provide. We're in 14 different states right now, 56 different jurisdictions. We're about to launch into Ohio, which is a deputy registrar environment as well. I believe that's going to happen in less than 3 weeks or so. And the way this program works is we provide, as a company, the kiosk, the services, the any maintenance that's required, the consumable product that goes inside, so the decal or sticker, however you want to refer to it, and the registration card and all of that. And then we collect a small convenience fee for each transaction that's run through the kiosk. I was asked once about our uptime on the kiosks, and it's, you know, above 99%. I don't know how many nines are after the decimal point, but it's definitely a 99.999 thing. And we have a field technician crew, that so if anything happens, our guys are all over it. We also provide a support mechanism where we automatically ping the kiosks. It's actually a way of hearing that the kiosk replies back, yes, I got your ping. And if there's a problem with that, then we dispatch somebody. So there's times that, or we can fix it remotely. There's times if there is a kiosk problem, we'll have it fixed before anybody even notices. A really successful version of this program has been in utilizing the retail environment. This has worked really well in a lot of states. In fact, continues to grow. You know, the essence of it was the COVID, the pandemic situation. So offices were being closed, or offices are open, but they're by appointment. Staff management, you know, some jurisdictions were we're cycling their folks in and out. So some you might work Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursdays, other folks, that kind of thing. So there's a limitation on the resources side of things. And ultimately, the kiosk is an extension of those services, whether it's in the office of the driver and vehicle services, or if it's in a retail location. We provide that service that otherwise would be required of a resource. And when it's in the retail location, now you're talking about, you know, go to the grocery store, you get your milk, you get your bread, you get your renewal certification or certificate. So it really is a situation where, as an extension of the services you bring to the citizens, it's more convenient for them, it's safer for them. The availability of the kiosk almost far exceeds the availability of going into an office. I can't actually think of a downside to having the kiosks. We're in about 14 states right now, as I mentioned, and every one of them is just really going gangbusters in terms of people utilizing the kiosks. I thought it would start to dwindle off just a little bit because people are starting to get out and about again, but instead the opposite's happened. More and more people are out and about going to the grocery store and using the kiosk instead of, you know, not that I want to say people don't want to go to their local DMV or motor vehicle office and wait to renew their registration. I'm not making that statement, but if you're getting your milk and your bread and you can renew, it's probably a more convenient way. And that's sort of sums it up for us. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I was just kind of curious if it's like an ATM for your license tabs.
Yeah, really, it's a touch screen, and you walk up. We have different models depending upon the jurisdiction that we're in. Walk up to the kiosk, touch screen to get it going. You can either scan a renewal card, you can put in your driver's license, you can key in your information if you want. We'll pull up your record, you renew it, you pay for it. When the transaction is done, you literally leave with a new registration card and a decal. And we do a lot of different services. So registration is the biggest by far because there's so many more cars than there are anything else, not to dabble on the train versus the car thing. But we do boat registrations. We do driver's license renewals. We do, if you need a driver history report, lots of different things that can leave the personnel within the tax collector or deputy registrar or even DMV offices to do the more complex transactions and not these that can be done so easily at the kiosk.
Thank you. Is there any questions to the testifiers or to Representative Elkins? Representative Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make the comment that I have seen these kiosks in action in North Dakota. I happened to be up there when somebody did a renewal. It's pretty seamless. It's pretty quick. They're in convenient spots, places that you would normally go anyway within the course of a week, whether it's a gas station, a convenience store, or something like that. They're all over the place up there, and they seem to work perfectly. I have legislator friends in North Dakota that have said they have not seen an issue. Nobody complains about them. No issues that way. So highly support this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Representative Barr. I don't see any further questions. So just a reminder that members, this is still informational, so we're not going to be voting. So Representative Elkins, do you have any closing comments?
I just wanted to add that the system's already been integrated with the FAST vehicle systems module. That's the basis of MnDrive here in Minnesota. So the technology is pretty much already proven.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. With that, I will hand the virtual gavel back over to Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle, and appreciate the discussion we've had so far. Members, we only have about 15 minutes and two more bills, so I'm going to just ask the authors and testifiers to be as brief as possible. Again, these bills are being laid over. There'll be opportunity for more discussion later in our process in a couple of weeks, but we just at least wanted to get these bills out into the public discussion. So if we could just keep it to about 8 minutes for Representative Westville and 8 minutes for Representative Bernardi, then I think we can get through our agenda. So Representative West, welcome. I'm so glad that you have the opportunity to present your bill, House File 1713, and this is for informational purposes only. Welcome to your own committee, and let's hear about House File 1713.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate hearing the bill, and I'm pretty sure we can get this done in less than 8 minutes. But House File 1713 is a relatively simple bill that will help the rental car industry recover from the pandemic. Current statute allows them to collect a 5% fee, which they use for their registration costs with the state. And if they collect more than their costs, that additional money they give completely to the state. So they don't profit off this fee at all. And as you can imagine, in 2020, they didn't do so well. They didn't even come close to recouping their costs because of the pandemic. And House File 1713 will allow them to retain the revenue from this 5% fee through 2025 or until they recover that loss from 2020. So this isn't a way to get them extra money. This is trying to recover the registration costs that they couldn't recoup in 2020. And this has little to no fiscal impact to the state because they don't collect more than their costs very often. If they do, it's not very much. So you might ask, like, well, why are we focused on rental car companies? Aren't there bigger issues? Well, I mean, rental car companies are all over the state, and they're in many of our districts. I mean, just for Enterprise Rent-A-Car, Representative Petersburg District, Bernardi, Frederick, Hausman, Mason, Murphy, Nelson, Richardson, and myself, and that's just this committee, we have Enterprise Rent-A-Car locations that could use this assistance. So this matters for all of us here. And I have Todd Hill and Stephen Harry from Enterprise to provide a little bit more context in under 8 minutes and answer any questions anybody has. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative West. Mr. Hill, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Todd Hill with Hill Capital Strategies, and I'm here on behalf of my client, Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And I'll be very brief. Representative West, thank you for carrying this bill and introducing this bill. I think you hit all the high points. I wanted to touch a little bit on the kind of the historical purpose for this bill. In the late 90s, we changed the way that rental cars were allowed to register their vehicles. We used to be able to transfer plates between cars, and in the late 90s, we took that authority away, and that had a significant impact on vehicle registrations. And so as we talked about how to address that issue, we came up with a couple of solutions. One, the state allows rental car companies to register their cars for more than or less than a calendar year, so we can try to manage the cost as we add cars and remove cars from our fleet. And then the second thing we did was put in place a 3% fee that would encourage rental car companies to register their vehicles in the state of Minnesota. And when we passed the last transportation funding increase in Minnesota, we also allowed that fee then to go to 5%. And as Representative West pointed out, typically we try to manage, or Enterprise tries to manage those costs so that we're not over-collecting. Last year, and Mr. Hari can go into greater detail, was a significantly bad year for Enterprise itself, where we collected nearly $600,000 less than what our plate costs were. And I think the thing to remember about this program, the reason that this fee is in place, is really to encourage companies to register their cars in the state of Minnesota. And Enterprise is a little bit unique because they are based here, or they have a corporate presence here, and so they tend to register their cars in Minnesota. But this really is intended to help encourage them to do that. And with that, I can turn it over to Mr. Hari. He can talk a little bit more specifically about the impacts that COVID has had on Enterprise.
Mr. Hari, welcome to the committee. And I'm sorry, we only have about a minute for your testimony, if you could make it as brief as possible.
Yes, I'll do that, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Steve Hari. I'm the controller for Enterprise Rent-A-Car in Minnesota. If I might, I just want to share a couple of stats with you about Enterprise in Minnesota. As Representative West mentioned, we currently have 59 locations in the state of Minnesota. Some of those locations also include two retail car sale locations. We also have 3 truck rental locations, and then the rest consist of all of our traditional rent-a-car services. Like most companies in the transportation and hospitality industry, Enterprise suffered a significant financial loss due to the pandemic. For the first time ever since this group was established in Minnesota, we were forced to lay off more than 100 employees. We temporarily closed several locations and also furloughed well over 100 employees and or reduced hours to our part-time force. You may have also seen in the news last year, unfortunately, one of our locations in St. Paul was burned down during the riot. So that was on top of the pandemic. Lastly, our airport location at MSP, which traditionally is approximately 50% of our fleet. We all know what happened to the airport industry, and at its bottom, our revenues declined 90% the last spring at MSP Airport. So once again, suffered significant financial losses. Chair Hornstein, Representative West, and members of the committee, I appreciate your time today, and I'm trying to cut it short. So I also appreciate your support and consideration of House File 1713. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and appreciate your testimony. And Representative West, closing comments. I just did want to point out to the committee, this is pretty historic. It is a Senator Tomasoni, Representative West bill. And there's some interesting, well, I'll just leave it at that. Representative West, a very quick 30-second summary here.
Yeah, it is a historic bill. So thank you for the time. We can get to it.
Okay. Appreciate it, Representative West, and this is an important issue. I'm glad you brought it to the committee's attention. Okay, members, last but not least today, we have House File 2295, Representative Bernardi. It's this year's version of a bill we've heard in the past, the Work Zone Safety Pilot Program. Welcome, Representative Bernardi, and again, we have about 8 minutes for your bill, so brevity would be important, and welcome to your own committee, Chairman Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This year I bring House File 2295, a collaborative approach which will bring MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety, State Patrol, to the table with Minnesota Safety Council, University of Minnesota Center for Transportation Studies, appropriate labor organizations, and private industry contractors who work in work zones to participate and collaborate on a review and analysis of issues involved in potential automated speed enforcement in work zones and discuss a possible safety advocates and others. They will be able to look at all the potential concerns together with benefits and create a plan, identifying statutory and financial barriers that may exist, including impact to state patrol, labor, and budget. Program recommendations that will require appropriation or statutory changes must be reported to the Transportation Committee chairs and their minority leaders in February of 2022. Legislature will need to take action on this issue prior to implementation. And if we were hearing amendments, I would be making an amendment to the language that is before you that would say three additional months, and it would be for February 1st. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I turn it over to our testifier, Sherry Munyon.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And just so you know, that you will have an opportunity, if this bill is included in the omnibus bill, to make that amendment, and then we'll have full committee discussion on it. Ms. Munyon, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Sherry Munyon, here today representing Citizens for Safe Work Zones and other advocates for safer work zones in Minnesota. Construction zones are becoming more dangerous for our workers. We have seen speed soar on our roadways. A recent Pennsylvania study found that 39% of all of their work zone crashes involve speeding, and 82% of crashes occur when law enforcement is not present. Bringing it closer to home, in Minnesota this summer, at a busy work zone along I-35W south of Highway 96 in Arden Hills, during the first full week of August 2020, the total volume of southbound vehicles numbered 332,000 over a 6-day period, 24 hours a day. An astounding 46% of these vehicles were speeding 10 miles or more over the posted work zone speed limit. That's about 152,000 vehicles. The contractor's attenuator equipment used in this work zone specifically was hit by vehicles more than 30 times by the end of August. One might think that reduced traffic on the road would reduce insurance claims, but that was not the case. While there were fewer crashes, the severity of crashes has increased due to the high rates of speed. So the cases that were in existence were in higher amounts. Last year, you heard from a flagger who is a wife, mother, daughter. She was struck by a motorist, forever changing her life. You also heard from the spouse of a worker who was killed in a work zone, a husband, father, and son, together with two of his colleagues. These crashes always change the lives of the individuals left behind as well. Mr. Lewis of Warning Lights states in his letter to the committee that this proposal could give workers the tool they have been looking for to keep thousands of workers that spend their long summer days working within feet of 70 to 80 per mile traffic safe, together with the traveling public. A wide variety of industry members and public safety advocates have to come together in support of this. I'll just name a couple in the interest of time. The Minnesota Safety Council, AAA Minneapolis, American Traffic Safety Services Association, Northland Chapter, also the Minnesota Asphalt Pavers Transportation Alliance, several chapters of the National Electric Association, including St. Paul, Twin Ports, Minneapolis, laborers from Local 1091, Local 49 Duluth, and some of our local contractors, Safety Signs, Egan Company, Warning Lights. So please put yourself in their boots and commit to work zone safety. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Munyon. I also understand that Ms. Witt from MnDOT wanted to make some brief comments, and then we'll close out our hearing. If there are some brief questions from committee members, of course, we would entertain those very briefly. Ms. Witt, please state your name for the record. Welcome.
Afternoon, Chair and committee members. My name is Jennifer Witt, and I'm with the MnDOT's Office of Government Affairs, and I will keep this very brief. Safety is paramount to MnDOT, and this includes the safety of workers and work zones. This bill lays the groundwork to implement automated enforcement in work zones to improve the safety for those workers and the traveling public. And so MnDOT supports this bill and looks forward to continuing to work with the author and other stakeholders to address any concerns and collaborate on language or issues to move this forward. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Witt. Are there any member questions or comments? We have a couple of minutes here, so wanted to make sure. I know this is an issue that has generated quite a bit of committee interest in the past. Seeing if I don't see anyone at the moment, so obviously this will be discussed further if included in the bill. Closing comments, Chair Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just encourage all of our committee and to join on to this bill to help keep our workers safe. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone, for your substantive but also brief comments on those last couple of bills. Members, for Thursday, I wanted to, we have some bills posted. And once again, we'll be hearing these on an informational basis. Some may or may not be included in the omnibus bill. I did have an excellent brief conversation with Representative Petersburg prior to our meeting. He has requested, and I believe we should act on that request, to have a brief conversation at the beginning of the next meeting about our target. We did receive our general fund target for this committee today. That is $39.6 million. And so we will, one of our tasks as we move forward in creating our committee bill will be to apportion that general fund money. So Mr. Lee will discuss, just in broad terms on Thursday, he doesn't know this, but now he does, in very broad terms for just a couple of minutes on Thursday, sort of what this general fund target means, how it fits into the broader budget for the legislature and the Transportation Committee in particular. So we'll start with that and then a number of bills on the agenda on an informational basis next week. And thank you, members, and thank you, Vice Chair Cagle, for chairing most of this meeting while I was in a different committee presenting a bill. So with that, members, we are adjourned.